starfish, and this is going to...
This is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin along with Jim Hickman, like old times, Jim. When sure. We used to do things on KBIX many years ago when you were over in Elk City. You still live in Elk City, don't you?
Sure do, Jerry. And it's, I'm glad to be back with you, too.
Yeah, it's good to be here. And we are having a great conference here, and I understand you've been very, very, very busy. You were up to midnight last night.
Yes, we were... It's been just a hectic conference. The whole town's busy. There's all kinds of people going around, and we've been busy manning our table at the conference, selling books and CDs.
Yeah, since we've had you on, you've done quite a lot, and I want to get into Skywatch International and what mm-hmm. happened there and everything. But let's talk a little bit about your book there and your table and and your wife is involved in this too.
She sure is. Has been for a while now. I have two books out now. First book, of course, you know, is 5,000 Years of UFOs, and it's been out for a couple of years. And the new book is called The Alien Menace, and that's what we're talking about here at the conference. The darker side of the alien abduction phenomenon.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in a little bit. That book is available, and we have a link on our website so they can order it for you, from you. And I want to talk about the alien menace. I heard you had some pretty scary pictures in your presentation.
Well, we absolutely do, involving human mutilations.
Mm-hmm. And last time I talked to you, I know you were investigating cattle mutilations and
yes.
the rumors of human mutilations. You've really gotten into that now, right?
Yes, we've actually, just within the last month, we've gotten autopsy reports from Brazil on this case that document this beyond doubt that it's not caused by human hands.
Wow. Are there any human mutilation cases in the United States?
Yes, there's been several. We just got through talking. I give a speech here at the conference. Probably the most famous is one that's reported by Don Ecker up in Idaho in 1979. Involved a gentleman that was found in the middle of the forest, completely nude, and was mutilated in the classic cattle sense with all his internal organs were removed. He had the coring and the other incisions that go along with the cattle mutilations. He was found with no tracks anywhere leading up to him. His feet were bare, and he was out in the middle of the wild country, and there were no marks on his feet that he had walked anywhere. His clothing and other personal objects were found miles away, and there was no way that he could have gone from where his clothing was found to where his body was found. So this is another unknown human mutilation.
What do you make of all of this and the cattle mutilations too? Are they connected?
It looks like it. The cases are so similar. The all of the wounds are identical. The incisions are the same. The cuts are the same within the body. The bones have been cut in what we call the cookie cutter style. There's no blood within the bodies. They're exactly identical, and more and more human cases are popping up all the time.
It seems to me, and you're into this much more than I am, but it seems to me, and I talked to Linda Moulton Howe about this at one time,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me that there must be something in the blood or something that they need.
It could be. We've been hypothesizing this could be a form of scientific investigation by the aliens to look into our DNA or maybe to recover some parts of humans that they need for their research. Apparently it's also within the cattle too because it's so similar.
And there've been thousands and thousands of cattle mutilations.
Oh, for sure. Linda Howe, of course, has been researching that since the 70s.
Yeah.
Chris O'Brien up in the Mysterious Valley in Colorado has been researching this for years. I've been researching it in Oklahoma for years, and these cases continue to this day on a daily basis.
Let's get back to the human mutilations for
sure.
A moment. In Idaho, you mentioned that case, and mm-hmm. there have been other cases as well, and they're all similar. The thing that I don't quite understand, and I'm sure maybe you have a read on it, is that these, and it used to be that way of cattle mutilations too. They just seem to be dropped back out of some kind of craft or something to the ground. I mean, they just seem to be splat. They're there.
Yes, exactly. This is very common. The case that we are documenting here in Brazil, the Garapanga Reservoir case, is exactly the same thing. He's found an island in the middle of a reservoir with high fences around it, and no footprints whatsoever in the dry mud. And apparently he was just placed there.
And is there any rhyme or reason on why they pick certain people? They just happen to be around at the time? Or they like abductions seem to be following in families or what? Or have you been able to track anything down on that yet?
No. There's no real family involvement, but it does appear that they try and find people in good health, younger people between 20 and 35.
Well, that makes me safe.
Yeah, we're both safe,
yeah.
Harry. I just got to watch out for the men in black.
Yeah, right. that's one reason you're kind of inclined to think it's maybe research.
Yeah, one reason. The other reason is because of the precision of the cuts. This it rules out your Satanist cults and your animal mutilation people that do this. Other animals that may be out scavenging, things like this, that's pretty much eliminated. Now, this is done by a medical professional, and it's also done by somebody that has tools that we don't possess here on Earth.
What, some sort of laser cut or?
The cookie cutter cuts that we talked about are done by what we consider to be a laser of some kind. And if it's done at the point that these people are found at, I don't understand how it could possibly happen, because lasers that have the power to cut bone would be so large that it would require a 18-wheeler to not only handle the laser, but also the generator required to give them the power to power the laser. Now, I work in the medical field, you know.
Yeah, I know that. I understand that.
I'm a biomedical engineer in my day job, so I know a little bit about medical lasers. I've been to Laser School in California, and I know about lasers. Medical lasers that we use are lucky to cut tissue. That's if you really get them fired up good. We have several types of YAGs and KTP lasers that we use in medical surgery. And they also have eye lasers, you know, that
I'm experienced with that.
Yeah. These are very, very low power. They measure them in watts, up to maybe 300 watts of power. The kind of power that it would take to cut through bones would take kilowatts, if not megawatts, of power. And the generator required would be massive. The lasers that we use every day in our hospital are the size of a large refrigerator, weigh up to 1,000 pounds, and take 480 volts of power. This is something that these farmers are going to hear and ranchers are going to hear. Some of these cattle mutilations happen right next to houses, right next to their house, and they don't hear a thing.
And you really don't have an explanation other than just a different technology, maybe.
Yeah. The only thing that they have in common is a lot of them see strange lights in the sky and report UFOs involved with it.
Well, and it's, I think, almost a given, probably, that the UFO is around someplace when these things happen, don't you?
Yes.
I mean, there also is the other side of the story. There may be some investigations by the United States government, some black ops operation that follows these mutilations as well. Have you run across that?
I'm sure they do follow it.
Yeah.
They have to. Because,
people end up seeing helicopters later and things like that,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
I've always got the impression they weren't really related to the original mutilation.
No, if the government wanted to mutilate cattle for some reason, they go to their own herds. The government owns hundreds of thousands of cattle. They would use their own herd. Why would they go harm private citizens' cows? It's just not possible.
You know, we're talking about this Brazilian case. Lots mm-hmm. of things happen in South America. that are
very much
that are strange and scary.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder, somebody just find the remains of this fellow laying out there by the dam, or what? I mean,
he was discovered back in 1988, and this was by Ignacio Garcia, the famous ufologist down there, and Dr. Ruben Ghost. And this case has pretty much been in the background because there's no proof. There's no proof that this actually was caused by alien hand. So it was just another urban myth, if you might want to say, a legend. Well, last month I received in the mail the official autopsy report on this case from the Brazilian Department of State Health. I have it in my possession, and it's written in Portuguese.
Yes.
Now, believe me, it's hard to translate Portuguese into English.
Oh, I understand it is, but you had it done.
We had it done, and some of the things, well, we can't really get too in-depth of this on radio because of the gory details, but some of the details we can talk about were his internal organs were removed through a 3-centimeter hole.
Now, that means it kind of sucked out then.
Exactly. That's actually
a minuscule level. I mean, that's small.
Right. It's less than about an inch and a half wide. Mm-hmm. And sucked out is actually in the autopsy report,
okay.
What they consider happened. Now, we're not just talking about soft tissue organs,
everything,
like the bowels. We're talking about the hard organs, like the liver, was sucked out through the 3-centimeter hole. I've checked with the doctors that I work with that do that type of surgery every day. It's called laparoscopy surgery. And they tell me that's physically impossible, that we humans cannot do that. Trained doctors cannot do that. So it's not our technology causing this.
And that must be a humongous force. We'll be back in a moment. I want to talk to our good friend Jim Hickman about Skywatch International and his new website, and we'll get back to the book here in a moment and a few other things. We've got lots of things to talk about. This is Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting from Roswell, New Mexico.
Want to start again?
Yeah, I wanted to. I'm ready, 11 minutes, whenever you are. You have to get a little closer to that mic.
Okay, let me scoot up on you. I thought so.
I was pushing you.
It's weak to fix that. I'll just lean over about like this.
Yeah, that'd be fine. That'd be perfect.
Okay.
I appreciate you coming down and searching me out instead of vice versa the other way.
Well, I owe you.
That we just,
like
I say, I told Roberta, I said, I'm going to take a nap before anything happens. And
well, I want to work with you as much as I can.
Okay.
Because you're one of the reputable people in this business.
Thank you. 45 seconds till, so anytime you want to.
I'm ready to start.
It's
okay. We're broadcasting from Roswell, New Mexico. We have Jim Hickman with us, and Jim used to do a radio show himself. In fact, Jim used to be a regular Friday night guest on my show on local radio many years ago. Well, not that many, 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim, you are here at the conference in Roswell. You're going to be in Tennessee now in September.
That's right.
And you're with Skywatch International. You replaced Bill Hamilton.
Yes, I did. Bill Hamilton retired about a month ago. And he selected me to take over as executive director.
Now, you've been connected with Skywatch somehow, right?
I've been with Skywatch since the beginning. Colonel Wilson, the founder of Skywatch, appointed me as vice president in the very beginning, about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider it a mission that I'm on to continue Skywatch in his honor, because he passed away. He's one of the many ufologists that passed away mysteriously over the last 50 years in this field. And
when you say mysteriously, what happened?
We call it ufologist disease.
Okay, I'd like to find out a little bit more about that.
I'm
just talking to
It's scary.
Yeah, and Druppel about that, mm-hmm. and last night about that, Professor McDonald and how he passed away.
Yes.
You're right, quite a few do under suspicious circumstances.
Exactly. It's very, very strange that the people come up with illnesses that they're just completely out of place, and they die in a matter of weeks. And maybe there's somebody causing this. So maybe we can get to the bottom of this someday.
Well, I'd like to, you know, that's right down my alley, those types of investigations. So let's keep our eyes open. Let me know if you know something. I'll help you as much as I can.
Well, I'm sure trying.
I'm sure you are. Now, Bill Hamilton is still alive and well.
He's
just been, he told me what he'd been doing about 50 years almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a little bit farther along than me. I started in 1962. So I've been at it a while, but not as long as Bill. Basically, what I'm trying to do with Skywatch is get it back in working order. It's been neglected for quite a while now, and my main goal is to get us back up on a level with MUFON and KUFOS as one of the world's leading UFO groups. Right now, we have about 1,600 members in our group, and I'm looking to get more membership. And I recently incorporated Skywatch in Oklahoma as a nonprofit research group. We have gotten the paperwork back from the Secretary of State. We're now a legal nonprofit group, so that anybody that wants to join our group can join up, knowing that the money is not going to go into somebody's pocket. It's going to go to fund UFO research.
Now the thing about you've got a website. Is it? Still, won't you give that address if you
well,
can?
It was the Hickman Report, but
we've
set that aside, and the new website is called skywatch-international.org. And we have a lot of information up there. We have a lot of good people working for us now already.
You got George Filer on board, huh?
Yeah, George Filer's my vice president, and I thought that was really great that he came on board with us. We've got a lot of good investigators. Dennis Balthizer from here in Roswell works with us as our state director. I've got Daryl Sims works with us as our Texas
right, and
director.
And Daryl happens to be here, too.
Yes, he's here in Roswell now. We've got all kinds of really, really good people that have consumed to work with us.
And well, that's great.
Steve Bassett's working with us.
Fantastic. And Steve, of course, is here. And we'll, these are all people that we'll have on during the month of July, by the way, folks. Here on the radio, and the interesting thing about Skywatch International is that you think about it, I guess it really started just a bunch of people going out and looking up at the sky on camping trips or whatever.
Right. Bill was real fond of going out to the Big Rock area in California and camping out by 29 Palms, and going out to the area around Nevada where the Area 51 is,
yes.
Camping out. And that's where Skywatch started, pretty much. And at one point in 2001, we had people in 133 countries in all 50 states. And we had over 100 trained investigators going around the country. And we're looking to get back to that level, if not more. And working hard on that.
Well, we'll keep plugging Skywatch International under your auspices. And we're glad to see that you brought it to Oklahoma.
Well, thank you. And we're glad to have it here in Oklahoma. I'm glad that Oklahoma's really welcomed us. We've got a nice certificate from the governor showing the incorporation. It appears they're real happy that we're here.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, how did this come about? Bill on the air told me he just had been doing it so long he wanted to do a few other things and late in life here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the doctor... Dan Burrish thing came up, and he said, "Well, that had nothing to do with it, really." Mm-hmm. We talked about that. When did Bill first tell you he might want to step down? I never really got a rumor about it until I guess he told Linda he's just tired.
Well, exactly. Well, I've known about it for several months before we officially announced it.
Right. Well, I'm sure.
And we've been working behind the scenes to get everything transferred over, the corporation paperwork, and get all the mailing lists and all the information over to my control and my website. But Bill has just really been working so hard on investigations that he's wore himself completely out. and he's going to take some time off and write some books. And I did the same thing. I handled Skywatch's mailing list for many years, and I took some time off in 2001 to write my first book, 5,000 Years of UFOs.
Yeah, and we talked about that book many times. Let's talk about this new book a little bit before the break, and then I want to get into some other things. But when you wrote this book, the dark side of UFOs, a lot of people don't want to talk about that, but you and I visited about that before.
Right.
And it's been that's been the main interest of my subject, by the way, of UFOs, that and the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about the fellow that saw the UFO over the side of the road in Oklahoma and the guy out working on it.
That's a strange one. It came from the Project Blue Book files. Mm-hmm. It's one of their 701 unknown cases. And the guy gave such a detailed report, he even gave the numbering off the side of the UFOs.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
So I'm interested. I call it nuts and bolts ufology, really.
Yeah. Well, me too. I'm an engineer in my day job, so I'm into nuts and bolts. Mm-hmm. I want to know how it works. If I had a UFO, I'd reverse engineer it in a minute to figure out how it runs. But now
you had a UFO experience down there in down by Lawton at one time.
Yes, I did. And I talked about it this morning, as a matter of fact. And it's really strange that you bring that up. I just received a letter from Stacy McGee, who runs the ARC conference. He interviewed Betty Hill from the Betty and Barney Hill case back in 61. And she had talked about how UFOs like to chase emergency vehicles.
And yeah, at the time you worked at EMS or whatever they called it down there.
Right, I was a paramedic for, actually in Clinton.
Okay.
And I did that for many, many years before I got into engineering. And it's a great job that I enjoyed doing it, but once you get older in age, it gets a little hard to do.
Yeah.
So I've moved into indoor work. As you can imagine, we were coming back from Lawton to Clinton it was after 3 a.m. And the roads between there are deserted as it is. And you can imagine how deserted it gets down there in the wildlife refuge at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's nobody there. Well, we came across a UFO on our way back. And I had my partner with me. We'll just give his first name, Steve. And we saw this object and off in the distance. And we stopped and we said, wow, I wonder what that thing is. It was bright orange light. And I told him, I think it's a UFO. You know, I've seen them before. He said, no, it can't be. Those don't exist. So I said, watch, I'll call him over. Of course, we were in an ambulance, so I flipped on the lights. And immediately that saucer flipped on its lights, identical to ours, and flew over in an instant, and it was directly overhead. Now, this thing was at 50 feet over our heads. It was so close we could feel the heat off of it. We could feel the vibration. We could feel the wind blowing off of it. We could see detail within the craft.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did it make a noise?
It made a electrical discharge, kind of humming noise.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I decided that it was probably better to have a little sense of reality here and get the heck out.
Yeah. Time to split.
Time to split, exactly. I said, that's a little too close of an encounter.
Was this a traditional saucer or a triangle, or could you tell?
It was a bright light 1 minute, and the next minute it was so close I couldn't give you a description of what it was, other than it was huge.
Huge, and it put its lights on, and you weren't going to wait for the tractor beam or anything.
No, exactly. Now, the funny thing is, Betty Hill mentioned that this happens all the time. I had no idea back in 81 when this happened that this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very common event, and if anybody out there listening has had a similar experience, I wish they'd write to me about it, because I want to document these.
Fantastic, and they can get in touch with you through your website, and we have a link to it. And for our radio listeners, give it one more time. We've got to go to a break.
It's skywatch-international.org.
This is Jerry Pippin. We have Jim Hickman with us, and we're from Roswell, New Mexico, and we'll be right back. We're talking with Jim Hickman. We're here in Roswell, New Mexico. I'm Jerry Pippin, and Jim, Roswell's, you know, famous naturally for this, and these people really go out. Did you go down to the parade last night?
No.
I didn't make it either. Usually they have a pretty interesting parade.
I understand they had a close encounter parade last night.
Yes, sir.
And we were here for the banquet for the Ancient of Days conference, and we were hosting a table at the conference, and of course the keynote speaker was Steve Bassett, my lobbyist, and of course the gentleman that runs the X conference in Washington,
yes.
D.C.,
mm-hmm.
And he's been a lobbyist in Washington for over 10 years now.
Right.
And he's working for disclosure with the government to get them to release the truth behind the UFO mysteries.
And as far as disclosure, what's your feeling about that? Do you think that'll happen? Or?
I do. I do think it'll happen within the next year. I think that the public pressure is starting to build, that everybody knows that it's
that
real.
That quickly, huh? Next year, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I've talked to Steve about this just recently. We both agree that by the end of 2005, we feel that this is going to happen. It was going to happen before 9/11, I think, real soon before that. But because of the security concerns then, I think they had to kind of cancel those plans. But I think now that people are ready. The only reason that disclosure hasn't happened is because they were afraid people were not ready for the truth, that panic would happen, that there might be changes to civilization caused by the knowledge that we are not alone. And I think people have been conditioned by the media, by shows like this, to realize that, yes, there's something out there in our skies that we can't explain, and the government can't explain, and they're not going to explain it to us until we can get enough people together to convince the government to release this stuff. And we're trying real hard. Steve's been working full-time to get them to release as many documents as possible, and we've got literally thousands of documents released on the UFO subject. John Greenwald, one of the speakers here,
yes,
at the conference, runs the Black Vault website.
Yes.
He talked yesterday, and he has thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of classified documents on his website, all relating to UFOs from all the various government agencies, from the NSA to all the way to the CIA and beyond. So there are plenty of interest in the government. Don't let them fool you that they quit investigating UFOs in 1968. They still investigate them today. There's still documents coming out dated 2004.
Well, as we say, George Filer, we talk about his reports quite often on our on our radio show,
mm-hmm,
about his website. And ever since 9/11, there's been jets around every UFO report almost.
Well, that's right. You know, the interesting one was back in 2002, the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the Washington, D.C. sightings,
yes,
in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to the day, almost to the hour, they had a UFO fly over the White House and was chased by fighter planes,
mm-hmm,
just like in 1952. So maybe they are planning to come and land on the White House lawn.
Yeah, we always hear that, you know, well, why don't they land on the White House lawn,
exactly,
instead of stopping out in Elk City and seeing Jim?
Well, it is the UFO capital of Oklahoma.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that before. We used to refer to that as maybe the Area 51 of Oklahoma.
Yes, yes. It's quieted down quite a bit lately, but back a few years ago, we were getting reports just seemed like almost every other day.
Yeah, you were quite busy there for a while.
Yeah, they go in waves like this, and just right now we're kind of a lull. I think they're afraid of the spaceport going in over there.
Yeah,
afraid they're going to get something launched against them.
Yeah, you know the interesting thing is that there seems to be a lot of activity in British Columbia and all of Canada, mm-hmm, these days.
Yeah, Brian Vike's been doing a lot of research up there and reporting a lot of these cases. We post all of his reports on our newsletter with Skywatch. We post George Fowler's,
mm-hmm,
and Brian Vikes and anybody else's UFO reports that come in. Joseph Trainer has, of course, the UFO Roundup. We,
yeah,
put that out every week, along with other reports that people have. And we put that out free to the public. Anybody that has a computer can get on our mailing list.
So All that information is right there on your website.
Yes, they can go to our website, and they go to the bottom right-hand corner, and there's a form, simple form. They just enter their email address there, and they can join up. It's free, and they can get the latest UFO reports, just like all of UFO researchers get them at the same time.
Well, Jim was doing radio shows himself after being our guest. You went out and started doing your own shows. You had to stop that because you can't do everything. I mean, it takes forever. Something has to go.
Well, that's right. And that was a free operation. I was doing it just out of my own goodwill to get the truth out. And
you had been around enough that you were able to get the important guest on, so that was
sure.
Good.
Sure, we had a lot of good times with it, but we have to move on now. Well, I've got a commitment to the Skywatch, which is one of the world's largest UFO groups, and it's taking my full time.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. What I was interested in, it's easier to be the host or the guest.
Actually, I think it's easier to be the guest because you don't have to come up with the questions.
Yeah, right. You got a good point there. Yeah, the secret, I guess, is to listen, and sometimes, you know, you all get sidetracked, and the guest is talking along, all of a sudden, you realize you don't have anything to say.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, panic spill. Oh, really? You know, the type thing. Let's talk about Roswell here.
Well, since we're here, though, it'd be good.
Yeah, what do you think about, you know, for instance, I've heard all kinds of stories about other sightings in New Mexico over the years, and what do you think really? You know, this has been a long time, and this thing is still going strong. We're just now finding out things. The Sci-Fi Channel sponsored that dig, and evidently there's still things coming out of that, and all kinds of things. What have you picked up any new scuttlebutt while you're here about Roswell?
Well, sure.
Good. Maybe I'll get an exclusive here.
Yeah. I've got an exclusive for you that has been missed since the day of the saucer crash.
Great.
You know, the front page of the Roswell newspaper that's on every web page and that everybody has that says, you know, U.S. Army recovers flying disc.
Are you going to say that's not real?
No, it's absolutely real.
Okay, good.
It's real completely. But there's a missing report on that very front page that proves that Roswell happened. And nobody knows about it.
Folks, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to find out what this missing report is. A missing report, huh?
Yes.
Huh. Jim Hickman is our guest. We're broadcasting from Roswell, New Mexico, and they really go out for the UFO thing every 4th of July. This is the second year we've been here in a row. And we'll be back and find out about the missing report from the Roswell, New Mexico newspaper. I'm Jerry Pippin. This is UFO Files. It's download. It's wait. I'm going to tell him about this.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Jerry Pippin. We have Jim Hickman with us, and we were talking about the Roswell event. And you say there's a missing story.
Yes, there sure is. You know the famous paper that says that there was a crashed saucer in Roswell recovered. It's all over the world. Mm-hmm. I think every website that covers UFOs in the world has that newspaper on there. Well, that's like Paul Harvey says, not for the rest of the story.
Okay, good. I'm waiting for it.
Okay, down below in one of the lower columns in the paper, you'll see a section there that says, Hardware Man Sees Flying Object. Mr. Dan Wilmot, who lives on Pennsylvania Avenue here in Roswell, was sitting on his front porch with his wife that night before the Roswell crash. And they were sitting outside looking at the stars. And he noticed about 10 o'clock that night a large flaming object fly overhead from the southeast to the northwest. And then saw a bright flash in the northwest. So apparently he was the only eyewitness to the Roswell crash. And this was placed on the paper.
It was a story,
nobody has ever picked up on it. They're so busy reading the headline that they didn't read the actual story. So this man confirmed that something flew overhead. This wasn't a weather balloon that crashed.
Is he still alive?
No, he's not. Okay. We've been down.
That's too bad. I was going to run down to Pennsylvania Avenue or wherever you said he lived.
I've done that. He'd be quite old by now.
Yeah, right.
No, he's. We've been there. We've been on the front porch, and we've triangulated that, and we've got with some of the other researchers and found that the trajectory would match exactly. It'd go right out to the crash site from where, if you triangulate from his, where he was on his porch watching it, it'd be identical. So he saw the object come over and crash.
That's incredibly interesting. Yeah, you know, you've been investigating light. I remember when we first started talking to you, people would call you up, and you literally would drive 50, 60, 70, 80 miles, 100 miles there to go talk to someone.
Sure.
And you do a lot of that in person instead of on the phone.
You have to. You have to, as a, you know, I'm an investigator for MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
I've been one since 71, 72. And part of our job is to go out and do field investigations. And we go out, anytime anybody calls in with a report, we'll drive out there and we'll take the report in person. That's one way you could tell the truth behind the report, because you look them in the eye and you say, you could tell, are they telling you the truth?
You get a feeling, right.
Yeah, and that's just something you get from handling thousands of these cases, that you get a feeling for the case. Should I spend more time on this one? Should I just drop it right now and go on to something else? You get that feeling.
Now, what would be a case that you investigated personally that really stands out? And before we get off, we're going to talk more about the human mutilations in your book. But
sure. Well, let's go back to Oklahoma's Area 51 in
Elk
City.
Okay.
That's probably one of the better cases recently. One of the cases I had was I was at home and had a gentleman call me and tell me, I know where you live. Would you look out your back door for me, please, and tell me what you see? And, of course, I kind of looked at my phone for a minute and said, what?
Yeah.
And then he says, go to your back door and look out and tell me what you see. So I did it. I saw purple and yellow lights flashing off in the distance towards the town of Merritt, about 6 miles from Elk City. And, of course, I live on the west side of town, so we have open fields there. It's real easy to see that far away. So I told him what I saw. He says, well, this thing's right over my house, and it's a mile wide.
A mile wide.
A mile wide. Yeah. And he was able to judge this because, you know, in Oklahoma, we have a mile wide. The roads are stretched that way.
Yeah, they have section lines.
Section lines, yeah. So he was able to see the section lines, and he estimated the width of this craft as being a mile wide. So I went out, and I followed this thing, and it went south.
You got in your car. Right?
I got my car, and I followed it. It went south towards the town of Merritt. It was seen by not only him, it was seen by other witnesses south of there, and I interviewed them later. They saw the object. At first, they thought it was a barn fire. It was so close to the ground,
mm-hmm.
And it was so bright. And they got real close to it before they realized that it wasn't a barn fire. They were within 500 feet of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they described it as huge, sort of a diamond-shaped craft. And it was giving off all kinds of bright lights. Two witnesses were there to see that. Another mile down the road, a highway patrol trooper had stopped somebody for speeding. This is on Merritt Road.
Mm-hmm.
And he had stopped him for speeding, and this object flew over his head. Now, he was not allowed to actually give an official report by the governor of Oklahoma. He was told that we cannot talk about this.
So it actually went up the channels all the way to the governor?
Yes, it did, because I had asked for official permission to interview him, and I was denied.
Wait, but when did this happen? Last year?
This happened in 2002.
Okay.
And it's up on my website. But I interviewed him off the record over at one of the local restaurants, and he talked about it, and he said it flew right over me, and I have no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. So I talked to him. That's a pretty reputable witness.
Yes,
a highway patrol officer telling me that. So I looked around for more witnesses in the area. So I went down another mile south. I found a lady that was she's about 80 years old. And she says, oh, yeah, those UFOs fly out here all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I saw it. I saw it plain as day. It flew over here. It says, I know all about UFOs because I'm a pilot. And I see them quite often. And she says, as a matter of fact, we had one that I was involved in right here in 1966. And she told me all about that case and mm-hmm. how it had been covered up by the local sheriff's office. And
What do you think the reason is they cover these things up? Do you think it's some kind of an official line, or do you think it's as innocent as, well, we don't want people thinking our people are loony?
It's both. we definitely know they don't want them to think they're loony because mm-hmm. they have reputations, the police mm-hmm. officers yeah. do. They have to testify in court. And you can imagine what a lawyer could do with an officer's testimony if they were all of a sudden to come in. Say, officer, aren't you the one that said you saw that crazy UFO?
Yeah.
You know, his credibility would go downhill real quick. So, but then again, you know, if he's brave enough to come out and talk about it, he's risking his credibility, and it must be true because these people are trained observers. They are paid to observe things, just like commercial pilots, police and fire officers are our best witnesses when it comes to UFOs.
Jim, when we come back here from the break, and we have a little bit of time left on the show, and I want to talk a little bit more about your book.
Mm-hmm.
But for that to get past the thing. This is Jerry Pippin with the UFO Files. We're broadcasting from Roswell, New Mexico, and we have another Oklahoman with us, Jim Hickman. I have to go. I had somebody yesterday from Oklahoma City on the air with me. We've been trying to make a connection for a long time, and we had to make it here in Roswell. It's kind of strange the way that works sometimes.
It is. I've been talking to you for years, and finally we get together here in New Mexico.
Yeah. Now, your book, The Alien Minutes,
mm-hmm.
You know, you really deal in some pretty scary things.
Well, I think somebody has to. You know, there's a truth behind this that needs to come out. Not all of these aliens are friendly. We get a lot of things in the media that tell us that these aliens are just the friendly type and that we should get to come out and meet them all the time, like a Spielberg's movie E.T.
Yes.
You know, the cute little alien. Well, I'm afraid that's fiction in most cases. If anything, they're benign or they are openly hostile to us.
What do you think the whole overriding factor there is? Are there more than one group of aliens? And there must be.
Well, I've heard people say that there's up to 9 different races, but as you can imagine, with all the planets that have been found recently, and you can extrapolate the amount of star systems that there are out there, the possibilities of the different races that there could be in the billions.
I mean, and you hear about cattle mutilations. Now you've laid down in this book the history of human mutilations.
Right.
Which is, you know, scary as hell. Make you wonder.
Well, I related the case here just at the conference just about an hour ago of the case of Jonathan Lorette, which happened over at White Sands Missile Test Range, which is just over the mountain range.
Well, we got a couple of minutes. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. This happened in 1956, and the sergeant worked on the White Sands Missile Base as a range officer. He was out working on the range with a captain and a couple other men when a disc-shaped object flew overhead and abducted him in front of these other officers.
They beamed him up or something?
Beamed him up,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh, in the classic sense. And, of course, the guys went right back to the base, to the officers, and told them about it. And they thought they were flat crazy. And then they eventually ended up, they thought that they had killed this guy and left him out in the desert.
Kind of a Travis Walton story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the one officer was almost convicted of this before they found him. They almost had decided, let's file charges on this guy. They did a search all over White Sands, could not find anything of the Sergeant Lorette. But then, a few days later, about 5 days later, his body appeared right where he had been dropped off. His body had been mutilated in the classic cattle sense. Once again, organs had been removed. No blood in the body anywhere. Some of his eyes were, one of his eyes was missing. He had part of his earlobes removed. His internal organs had been removed. And to this day, we have no idea what caused that. The Air Force had hushed it up. J. Allen Hynek investigated it, the famous the Air Force investigator. He was in charge of their scientific committee for Project Bootleg. He came out and investigated it, and his conclusion was that we should keep this whole thing quiet because of the panic that could cause to the public.
Well, what do you think here in a closing minute ratio? Are good agents bad agents? You think they're more bad than good, or do you have any idea?
I do. I think they're more bad than good. I think the more of them are more of the scientific type, and they treat us more like lab animals. But then they're the ones that are just deliberately evil, and we have to deal with that.
You have any idea where they're from?
I hope a long way away.
Okay. That will close. Thanks very much, Jim Hickman. It's been a joy.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Jerry Pippin, and you are listening to the UFO Files. Our producer is Roberta Scott. It's been keeping track of our time for our segments. And until next time, cheers.
Thank you, Jerry.
Don't worry, Roberta. I'll get the control over there. Is it working?